and started yelling that it was his fucking party so he could do what he wanted. But the king still wouldn't let them. Then the king started to limbo under a 12-inch bar, and Vince was so pissed off that he started throwing bits of chicken at him. He hit him in the face, and the king of limbo stormed off, so then I had MTV and an angry crowd on my back. Great. Just great.
October 31st, 1987. Van Nuys, 11:30 p.m., day off. Spent today filming the video for You're All I Need with Wayne. I wonder if I should send Nicole a copy. I told management I need to change my room name when the tour starts back up to Sharon Needles. They didn't like that very much, so of course that's gonna be my new name. Rather fitting if you ask me. Random unused lyric. Nothing to share except these needles.
Wayne Isham. Before the video for You're All I Need, we had a long talk over what we wanted to do. We'd seen this news story about a guy who killed his girlfriend, which Nicky related to events in his own life. He kept saying there was a personal angle, but I never really understood what he was talking about. Plus, he always loved the Sid and Nancy idea, so we wanted a video about a self-destructive relationship. The video started with the police putting a girl's body in an ambulance and arresting her boyfriend. Then it went back to tell their story. There's a lot of yelling and screaming, but no actual violence. Not that that stopped MTV from banning it, as usual. They said it was too literal and implied violence. It was a typical ballsy crew thing to do. They just love to step up and do stuff other bands wouldn't touch. Originally, the band wasn't even in the video, but the record label made us add some band footage, which we shot in my studio. I wish I could say I looked into Nicky's eyes and saw the mental state he was in back then, but I didn't.
November 1987. P.S. I didn't tell anybody, but I scored a balloon of Persian. Day off. November 1st, 1987, Van Nuys, noon. I'm reading On the Road by Kerouac again. I feel so connected to writers like Kerouac, Allen Ginsberg, and William Burroughs. I hear people wish they say they were old enough to live through the 60s, and others say they should have been around in the 20s. This was a time when I would have loved to be alive. Their ability to shock society with their words and fillet the law with their freedom leaves me envious. I'm drug-free today and feel so alive. It's good to be home. So far, the cockroaches of my life haven't discovered I'm home yet, and I'll be out of here before they can come to feed on my weakness. Karen seems amazed that I'm lucid. That makes two of us. Maybe I'm beating this thing little by little. P.S. I love these lines from the book I'm reading. To me, this describes Motley to a T. Here's to the crazy ones, the misfits, the rebels, the troublemakers, the roundheads and the square holes, the ones who see things differently.
Karen Dumont. Whatever he did, Nicky managed to put a good front on for me. He was stronger than anyone I know at making things look okay. The fact that he functioned so well while doing massive amounts of drugs shows how good he was at keeping things together. There were times it looked really rough, but I naively just put it down to him being a lazy slob. He'd laugh at me telling him off, but he was never nasty to me, and I never realized how badly he was doing. I'd always thought being messed up brought the nasty side out of people. Vince was more like that. He was scary.
November 2nd, 1987, Van Nuys, 3 p.m., day off. Home sweet home. I had breakfast this morning with Karen. I actually cooked. I think she was just being kind because I could hardly eat the eggs. They were like rubber. I told her about the new video being based on the movie Taxi Driver. She said she didn't know if MTV would have the balls to play it. That's fine by me. It's becoming so boring. A bubblegum channel. and there's all these cheeseball bands coming out and just ruining everything. I honestly don't think anybody understands what Motley Crue is, or they wouldn't try to copy us. We're a train wreck, a bastard child between punk rock and heavy metal. And some people somehow think it's cute. If only they knew. We would rather slit your throat than be part of this. So I hope MTV doesn't play it. I went to the dog park with Whiskey. Wow, there are a lot of hot girls there. Maybe I should have showered a week ago when I said I would. They probably thought I was a homeless guy. That's better for me. Chicks equal trouble, and meeting a chick in a dog park is a perfect setup for disaster. P.S. Today's my last day home. Gotta go back on the road tomorrow. Lyric. Rodeo. Laughing like gypsies, show to show, living my life like a rolling stone. This is how my story unfolds, traveling man, never at home. Can't find love, so I sleep alone. This whiskey river has a long way to flow. All that I know is life on this road. Municipal Auditorium, Mobile, Alabama. November 3rd, 1987, Van Nuys, 8 a.m. Limo's here. I have a noon commercial flight to New Orleans where a jet's going to take us to Mobile. I never unpack again. Maybe I'll just throw these clothes away and buy new ones on the road. There are holes in most of them anyway. On the jet, 5 p.m. Sitting here on the jet waiting to take off. I think Vince must have pulled an all-nighter. He looks a little tattered around the edges. Me? Yes. It's usually me that's tattered, or better yet, shattered. It's amazing what a few days without a hangover will do for your disposition. I'm feeling creative, which for me means life. I struggle between creativeness and being somewhere between slump and completely dry. Backstage, Mobile, 7 p.m. Just got to the gig. I'm so tired I couldn't sleep on the plane again. I've been thinking about my mother and father a lot. The last few days, it seems, when I don't do drugs, that's what I do. I guess maybe the drugs are part of me killing the pain, but for once, thank God, I didn't do anything the last few days. It's nice to not have still been up when the limo showed up. I'm going to go over and see Slash and the guys. They joined the tour tonight. Now the bad news for them. Tom Zutaut told me they were a younger, crazier Motley Crue. Does that sound like a challenge or what?
Slash, we were really excited to go on the road with Motley. We had a lot in common. We were both from L.A. and we were total hellraisers. We had toured Canada with The Cult and played with Iron Maiden and Alice Cooper. But Motley Crue was cool, and they were at their peak. It was a chance to hang out with a bunch of guys who had been around a lot longer and test the water to see if we were crazier than them.
Lyric, living in the know. TV says 10 dead for Christmas, stalker on the loose. Another freeway shooting, and I'll be hanging by a noose. I can't seem to shake it. I can't bend the spell. Special thanks to Mom and Dad for bringing me to hell. Civic Center, Albany, Georgia. November 4th, 1987, backstage, 6:10 p.m. Spent the night in Mobile last night. So good to see Slash. Guns N' Roses was awesome last night, but our fans can be so brutal. They just stood there for the most part and stared. They just don't want to see anybody but us. Maybe someday we will do an evening with, but Doug says that is suicide. Anyway, I think they're going to be huge, but what do I know? I thought the same thing about the Ramones. Last night I drank very little, half bottle of Jack, but I can feel the demons in my head knocking, and I don't want to let them in or out. November 5th, 1987, day off, hotel, New Orleans, 1:30 p.m. Today I've decided to write my mother a letter. Probably with no real intention of mailing it. Dear Mother, I'll start out this letter by asking how you are, with no real interest in an answer. I'm just trying to be polite, a good son, so to speak. If I were honest, I would ask you something with a sharper edge to it. Maybe something not so simple. Maybe something we could both relate to rather than how's the weather. And is work treating you well? Oh, hell. We've never been ones for hiding our disdain for each other. I mean, you showed me yours by abandoning me years ago. But why don't I get to the point? Did you ever miss me when you shipped me off to Grandma's? Was I even in your thoughts? Did you cry like I did once your car turned the corner and sped away? I'll tell you, I used to love you, even though I didn't know you. That's the innocence of a child, so I don't regret it. Nona and Tom always gave me love unconditionally, but as a boy, I pined for my mother. I'd lie in bed at night wondering if you were out buying me presents that very day, waiting for your phone call that never came. And in my heart, I knew you were always planning for my return. I knew it was just a matter of time and you would save me. I really thought you loved me, but I was wrong. You weren't out buying me anything but a fucked up childhood, and you weren't planning anything except how to ruin my innocent life. Let me ask you an honest question. How did it feel when I did the same to you? Does it burn when my name is mentioned on the radio? Do you feel like your guts were torn out, or do you still feel the same? It would be sad if you still felt the same, because my plan of ripping your heart out would have failed. I think I've done a good job so far, but we're not done. Not until you're dead, and only then will we be even. I guess life just doesn't always work out, but you started this. I hope you die with a broken heart. Isn't life grand? Love your son.
Deanna Richards. Tom always told me that eventually he would tell Nikki the truth of what happened when he was a child. That Nona and my sisters had taken Nikki away from me when I had always wanted him back. I always prayed Tom would tell him that, because I wanted Nikki to know the truth more than anything else in the world. But Tom never did. One time in 2001, Tom had gone out to join Nikki on tour, and they were passing through Seattle. I went to the airport to meet Tom for an hour and asked why he still hadn't told Nikki the truth, but Tom just said he won't listen, and I asked him, "What do you mean he won't listen? Nona has been dead long enough now for you to tell Nikki the truth, and I think you're dragging your feet." I looked at Tom and said, "I should have been strong enough to fight you guys. You could have never taken Nikki away from me if I had been strong enough to fight you." And he looked at me and he said, "Yes, we could have." And he had a look on his face and a venom in his voice. And I suddenly realized he'd been part of the plan all along. My daughter Cece has literally saved my life, because there have been a few times that I thought I couldn't go through the pain anymore, and I wanted to end it all, because Nikki and I were separated all those years, but I never, ever wanted it.
Tom Reese. Bullshit. I never said that to Deanna. She is just on a big guilt trip. She twists the truth and she tells lies as she has done all her life. I've told Nikki the truth many times. Deanna was so full on drugs for so many years that I don't know how many brains she's got left. Really. I've told her before the way that she goes through life, but I'm not going to get into this anymore. I'm 78 years old and I just don't need it.
Cece Comer. There are so many things that Nikki doesn't know about the life my mom and I had back then. She always acted like everything was okay, but often it wasn't. She had a stroke in the 80s and got really sick one winter, and we ran out of food and oil in the house we were renting. I ate ketchup on toasted bread and woke up with frozen hair so many times that year. Mom always loved Nikki and wanted him to be with us, but we had some hard, hard times. I think Mom and Nikki's relationship is too common and very sad. It takes the focus off the right things and keeps them in a dark place. By now, all the stories are so convoluted and everyone seems to suffer from selective memory. But I do know this. Whatever happened back then, Mom always wanted Nikki by her side. She's never really given up. No mother does. The bottom line is that he wants and needs his mother, and she wants and needs her son.
Cajun Dome, Lafayette, Louisiana. November 6, 1987, backstage, 7:45 p.m. Guns is on stage right now, but the weirdest thing happened a few minutes ago. The band walked in, and we had a line of coke 6 feet long. I asked the Guns guys if they wanted a bump, and they all just looked weird at each other. Finally, Tommy said, "Come on, you guys, you're supposed to out-motley us." So Axel bent down and did the smallest bump and then coughed and then said he had to go on stage. Then they walked out. We all looked at each other. We started busting up. Vince said, "Fine, more for us." Then we did the coke ourselves with Fred, Hawk, and some of the road crew. I gotta call Zutaut. Fuck, it wasn't that much blow anyway.
Slash. Axl was never really a drug guy, but Guns N' Roses was a full-on heroin band, and you can't do that on the road, so we were pretty clean on tour. Coke was never my drug of choice either. Our drug thing was more like a day in the life, a personal internal crisis that we didn't want to be known, whereas Motley was hell-bent on being the band with the most excessive, outrageous public persona. Motley pushed the envelope to be the most alcohol and coke-consuming band going. That was their whole image.
They say, be careful what you wish for, but we were never careful. Lakefront Arena, New Orleans, Louisiana, November 7, 1987, backstage, 5 p.m. Tonight's show is going to crush. The crowd's going crazy out in the parking lot. They're already ripped, shouting, "Crew, crew, crew." You can feel it. When it's on edge, rock and roll, impending chaos is good. Gonna go out tonight for a bit. Mississippi Coliseum, Jackson, Mississippi, November 8, 1987, on the jet, 4:20 p.m. We just landed. I'm hungover like a motherfucker. Heather's here, so Tommy hung out with her last night. Mick was with fucking Amy. Vince did the same thing as always, strip club. So I took Slash out to some cool bars in the French Quarter of New Orleans. We got fucking smashed. I took him to the dungeon, but they wouldn't let us in. Slash asked why, and Fred explained that I'd cut the bra off of a girl in the club last time I was there. Unfortunately for me, it was the owner's girlfriend. P.S. I scored a balloon of Persian. No needles, just chasing the dragon. It's so easy in New Orleans. I bought it right in front of everybody, and no one even saw it go down, not even Fred. I can spot a junkie a mile away, and obviously they can spot me. When Motley toured with Ozzy in 1984, we had a date in New Orleans in Mardi Gras. Ozzy and Motley Crue in New Orleans on Mardi Gras? Bad move. Our management was very nervous, and so was Sharon Osbourne. Ozzy went out with Vince. They got in all sorts of trouble. Tommy and I took Ozzy's guitarist, Jakey Lee, out to the Dungeon Club. As always, I had a knife, and there was a girl in the club with the top that was basically exposing everything, but there was just enough material there to piss me off. So I took out my knife, grabbed the top, cut it off. Her boobs came flying out, and I said, "Now the party started." All of a sudden, this shadow appeared above me. The club security guard, she was his girlfriend. Then security took me and Tommy and Jake and threw us into the street and started hitting us with these baseball bats with spikes on them. We were all cut up and beat up and we ran off. When we showed up years later, they told us we were banned. I said, "That was a long time ago." And they said, "Not in our minds."
Fred Saunders. We spent hours driving around the French Quarter of New Orleans trying to find a friend of Nicky's to score some heroin. I said that I wasn't going to let him do it, so he fired me. Nicky was always firing me left, right, and center. Then we tried to go to the Dungeon Club, and they refused to let us in, which, frankly, I was neither surprised nor bothered about.
November 9th, 1987, day off. Marriott Hotel, Huntsville, Alabama. Room 432, 4:30 p.m. We played Huntsville a year or two ago, and some kid claimed we had shot shattered glass into the audience and blinded him. Doc said he is suing us. The kid says we had cannons on stage, that's AC/DC, and shot glass out of them. I even heard we might have shot pieces of metal, too. What the fuck? I hope this kid doesn't come see us tonight. Oh, yeah. He's fucking blind, so he won't. Van Braun Civic Center, Huntsville, Alabama. November 10th, 1987. Hotel. Noon. Fuck. I just got a call from Rich. Me and Slash were drunk and wrestling in the bar last night, and I guess he landed on his neck. He's pretty messed up. He's going to have to wear a neck brace to support his neck. Fuck, I feel bad. It's always fun until someone gets hurt. P.S. I'm still wondering if that blind kid's going to show up to see the show.
Slash. Nikki and I had been in the bar for hours drinking shots, and we started wrestling. Nikki is a pretty big guy, and he fell on top of me. The next morning, I woke up with four dislocated vertebrae in Tommy's drum tech spider's bed. I had to see the doctors and have acupuncture for the next 3 weeks of the tour. And all the time I was on stage, I had to keep my top hat on and not move an inch.
Jefferson Civic Center, Birmingham, Alabama. November 11th, 1987. Hotel, 3:10 a.m. Battling everything. I feel like I'm at war with everything and everyone. I don't understand. Why don't I feel anything but anger? The only time I don't feel it is when I'm numb. It's just not working like it used to. I'm tired of writing about it, but this is my only way to vent. I'm so fucking tired, and I don't know why. Why is it that the word why is always on the tip of my tongue? Why? Why was I treated like I was as a kid, like I was just in the way? Why did my mom always want to be with someone other than me? Why did my dad leave? Why do I have no belief or trust in God? Why am I here? Why can't I stop doing drugs? Why can't I find love? Why? Lyric. Father. All these years, an angry child. Broken, shattered, torn inside. I feel old. I feel dead. Barely hanging by a thread. Father, where were you? To my father, how could you run? You walked away, abandoned your son, broke my heart, left me dying, so fucked up where I came from. What's a father without a son? It's like a bullet without a gun.
Cece Comer. My own father has always questioned whether I'm his child or not and has made it clear over the years that he was more important to himself than I was. It's different with Nikki's dad, because Nikki never had the chance to be slapped in the face like that. He's just had to guess. He may be better off that his dad wasn't around like mine, but the pain eats at you that you don't know the real truth. Your own truth. I know Nikki wonders what it would have been like to have a dad, but it's the coulda, woulda, shoulda syndrome that is so hard to deal with because ultimately you never know.
2:15 p.m. Someone's just banging on the door over and over until I just screamed, fuck off. Then Fred called and said it's time for the bags. I guess we're leaving at 2:30. Fucking pills and smack. So what do? Roll over and start writing. You're my only friend, and I feel I need to talk to you. I can't seem to find my smile. I can't seem to find my passion. I can't seem to find myself. I'm drowning. I'm not sure which is worse, my addiction, which haunts me, or my gradual slide into insanity. Can't even get into words what I feel. I know I don't know, and that's a crazy fucking feeling. I'm going to try and pull myself up by the bootstraps and suck it up, but to be honest, the decay is starting to show. Backstage, 6:30 p.m. Just got to the gig late because of me. I think I'm in Alabama. I ran straight into Duff. He was standing there in boxer shorts, no shirt, and cowboy boots. I said, Duff, nice look, and he said some girl stole all his clothes when he was passed out last night. Now that's fucking funny. Okay, I need a drink. P.S. Hey, what has 48 legs and 12 teeth? Answer, the front row in Alabama. November 12th, 1987. Day off. Marriott Hotel, Savannah, Georgia, 4 p.m. I called home and checked my answering machine. I had two calls. One was a wrong number, and one was some girl, don't know who, saying, "Hey, Nikki, fuck off." That pretty much sums up my life back home. Savannah Civic Center, Savannah, Georgia. November 13th, 1987, hotel, 2:40 p.m. Just woke up. Eyes are crusted over. Nice look. Been nose deep in Animal Farm by George Orwell for the zillionth time. I just love this book. It's something so parallel to rock and roll. After all, we are sort of the animals taking over society, never really thinking out what the end will be, and if we do, it's tainted. Great book. Last night, me and Tommy filled the elevator with furniture from our rooms, and then Tommy ran and phoned Slash and Duff and told them to meet us in the lobby. We waited and then jumped in the elevator and pushed lobby. When the doors opened, they were waiting. We were just kicking back, and everybody started laughing, so we all just rode up and down the elevator drinking and doing lines until the hotel said they were going to throw us out.
Tommy Lee. One night Slash was drinking with me and Nikki and trying to keep up with us shot for shot on the Jack Daniels. We were sitting at the bar for hours drinking, then suddenly Slash put his head underneath the bar and puked everywhere. He was starting to go down, so we took him into his room, where he immediately passed out. We set him up on the bed and took a Polaroid photo of Slash lying on his back passed out, and Nikki put his ball sack on his chin. That picture became Slash's tour laminate, lying unconscious with Nikki's nuts sitting on his chin.
Coliseum, Columbia, South Carolina. November 14th, 1987, hotel, 4:30 p.m. I look back on my diaries, and half the time, I don't even write when the dealers show up. It seems too redundant. But I said I would try to capture every moment, good or bad, in my diaries, so here goes. It's been snowing again. I haven't been sleeping more than an hour or two for a few nights. I'm starting to hide in my room again. I feel like I might be getting back to my old habits, and it's like a car skidding out of control. There's nothing I can do about it. I don't want to do the drugs, but it's all I think about. If I don't do it, well, I can't not do it. I found a few old rigs in my suitcase and shot up my last bit of junk after snorting tons of coke last night. So I'm out of junk. Wish I'd found the rigs when I had some blow. A speedball would have been nice. I'm so sick.
Doc McGee. People ask why we never confronted Nikki about his addictions, but we'd always try to talk to him and it just did no good. It got ugly really quickly. Artists die on the road and fans say if the other band members really loved them, why didn't they help them instead of letting them die on their own in a hotel room? They probably tried loads of times to intervene, but eventually, when somebody is obnoxious all the time, you get numb to it.
Greensboro Coliseum, Greensboro, North Carolina, November 15th. 1987, backstage, 7 p.m. Bored. Can't wait to get on stage to have something to fucking do. November 16th, 1987, day off, hotel, Knoxville, 5:30 a.m. Got into Knoxville 2 hours ago on the jet. Went down to Tommy's room, did some lines and listened to music. We ran out and went down to Fred's room for an ace in the hole, but he just had a tiny bit. Fuck. I have a day off tomorrow, and I'm in the mood to get high. Now I'm fading. Good night.
Fred Saunders. I had a little trick that I would sometimes play with Nikki when he was hounding me for coke late at night. He would ring my room saying, "Dude, ace in the hole," and before he turned up, I'd crush up a sleeping tablet, make it into a line, and give it to him to snort. We'd start talking, and within 5 minutes, he'd be yawning and saying he was tired. Then I'd walk him back down to his room and put him to bed. I don't think he ever figured out I was doing that.
3:25 p.m. Great show last night in Greensboro. I really felt like I was in one of the world's greatest bands for an hour and a half. I felt like there were no sour, decaying souls up there. We punished the audience with volume, and it hasn't been that tight in a long time. After the show was different. We were trying to get some blow. It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen. It's like we mention it and the airwaves go quiet. Nobody will respond, or they say they're busy and will get back to us. I think someone's been telling the crew and the staff not to give us drugs. Midnight. Sitting here alone, staring around this room, wondering what the hell I'm supposed to do when I'm not on stage or on drugs. I have moments of complete lucidity, and I ask a lot of questions, and they hurt, because I don't have most of the answers.
Slash. I was amazed on that tour how Motley Crue always had this whole intricate system going of people with walkie-talkies looking for blow. They always seemed to know where the nearest blow was, but to be honest, trying to stuff as much coke as I could in my face seemed pretty boring to me. Had it been a dope thing, it would have been a lot darker and more dramatic.
Knoxville Coliseum, Knoxville, Tennessee, November 17th, 1987, Hotel, 1:40 p.m. Some nights when I lay my head down, all I hear is ringing, and it's getting worse every year. I never really mentioned this. I guess it's just become normal to me, but lately, I hear it when I wake up too, if it's too quiet. I guess as long as it goes away when I'm done touring, it's okay. Jefferson Civic Center, Birmingham, Alabama, November 18th, 1987, Hotel, Knoxville, 3:15 a.m. Show was good, sold out as usual. Drugs, yes. Alcohol, yes. Groupies, yes. Depression, yes. Some girl asked me for an autograph, and I asked her why. She said, because she admires me. I said maybe she should see a shrink then. She started crying. I started laughing. Fuck this. I don't want to be a star. I don't understand anything anymore. Bob Timmons keeps calling me, asking me to consider rehab. I asked him if there's one that won't preach God to me like the last one. He just sighs and has that nervous laugh. Nobody understands me. Nobody. I'm lonely, don't know how to live, and I just can't seem to die. Backstage, 6:15 p.m. Just flew into the gig. No hotel until we get to Atlanta. I feel like my skin is rotting off me. I smell like shit, and my shit has more and more traces of blood in it. I can't explain how I feel other than I feel like I'm about to burst into tears at any moment. I walk around in circles in my room night after night. I can't seem to find a path. The fuck is happening to me? I can't wait to get the show over so I can hide. You know, I don't know how much more I can take. I'm calling Bob and asking him for a number of a psychiatrist. I'm crying out for help on the inside, pretending I'm okay on the outside, but I know it's not a good facade at all.
Tommy Lee. Nicky was never that stumble-around, fall-down guy who gets told to get his act together. He would just go into his room and get high alone. We all sort of did it. After months of being on tour with the same three guys, when it was travel, eat, sleep, fuck together, we just wanted to go to our rooms after the show sometimes and not see each other. I'd sit in my room and do a couple of grams of fucking cocaine by myself. The guys would phone my room and say, "What are you doing?" And I'd say, "Nothing. Bye." Then a couple of hours later, I'd be calling them, "Hey, dude, you got any blow?" We were just all apart playing these games in our own little worlds.
November 19th, 1987. Ritz-Carlton Hotel, Atlanta, Georgia, 8 p.m. Did a lot of nothing today. Played guitar a little, read, nobody to call really except the office. Doc is MIA again. I guess he's on vacation somewhere. It kills me to think of him laying on a beach somewhere with a drink in his fat little hand, watching the sun go down and being able to enjoy some of this fucking money we make for him while Doug and the band are just slaves to the grind. Spoke to Slash at his hotel, told him to meet me here around 9 or so and we'd go out, maybe hit a strip club. I asked him to invite the guys, but only Duff and Steven ever show up. I'm really trying to get out of this funk. I called Bob Timmons and asked him if there was a drug for depression. He told me yes, but getting sober would cure a lot of these feelings. I have to admit, as I sit here with a whiskey in my hand and a plate of half-eaten eggs, it's scary but intriguing. I know when I'm losing my mind on drugs, I would do anything to stop. But when the drugs wear off and the head clears, I feel the need to try and control it one more time. But now something else is eroding me, and I don't know what it is. Bob said he could find me a psychiatrist in L.A. who deals with addiction, but I said this is deeper than that. My wounds are bursting at the seams, and the original pain is filled with pus. Is it childhood issues, or am I just losing my sanity? The Omni, Atlanta, Georgia, November 20th, 1987, Ritz-Carlton, 5 a.m. I'm drunk and in a great mood. Slash and me sat at the hotel bar and got smashed. He threw up spaghetti all over the bar and then ordered another drink. I always wanted a little brother. I think I just found him. Good night.
Tom Zutaut. From one glass of whiskey to the next fix of junk, Nikki and Slash were both on the same train at the same time, skipping from one party to the next, looking for the most fun to be had by all in their wildest rock and roll fantasies. Slash was also very social, fun to be with, kind and considerate, and appreciative that Nikki gave Guns the shot on the crew tour. He was also always the last to leave the bar, so it wasn't hard for Nikki to find him when he wanted to have fun or get high. Axel was different. He was very serious about working hard to move GNR to the next level and was not happy about the excessive partying his band was falling into. What Nikki didn't know at that time was that Geffen was about to give up on Appetite for Destruction at around the 200,000 mark and tell Guns to make their next record. Instead, the Motley tour kept the GNR night train on full speed overdrive and tipped the scales in favor of Geffen continuing to promote Appetite. It ended up selling more than 20 million.
4:20 p.m. Got a sold-out show here tonight with another show back here in a few days. Fucking weird routing. Writing some music, poetry, reading, nothing much on TV. My life is all about the rock and roll grind of hotel gig, hotel gig, hotel gig. The repetition just wears you down. Then add a few hangovers, a pill or 10, a bindle or 2. And oh God, don't forget the girls who can barely count to 10 and the hanger-oners who say they're your friends. It seems like a never-ending cycle, so I get a lot of pleasure out of fucking with room service people. I'll answer the door naked or have a knife out, only wearing cowboy boots, or ask them which city we're in, still having makeup on from last night's gig. It's fun to watch people act like nothing is wrong. Sometimes I get a call from Rich or Fred, and they say, "Six, you're scaring the people at the hotel again." Okay, off to the gig. Backstage, 7:45 p.m. Just got off the massage table here in the dressing room. We were having a few drinks, and Doc just came in and said Axel got arrested for jumping into the audience. Slash is up there singing a Stones song, and it's not going well. Guess I'd better get ready. I think the crowd is probably getting unruly. 11 p.m. Slash wants to go out because he's pissed off at Axel, so I'm taking him to a killer strip club. I guess they need to wait for their singer to get bailed out tomorrow. I don't think I'll offer Slash any junk because I know he used to have a problem, and one of us slipping back is bad enough.
Doc McGee. Axl Rose was on stage in Atlanta when he saw one of the security guards, who turned out to be an off-duty cop, pushing their fans around. Axl jumped off the stage and started fighting the guard, so security grabbed him and took him backstage. So Slash sang a few songs, and Guns drum technician sang Honky Tonk Woman 4 times, not terribly well. I told security, "Look, let Axl finish the show, then shoot him for all I care." But they called the police. I said to Axl, "Be nice to the cops and they'll let you go." Then a cop walked in and asked him for his full name, and Axel said, "Fuck you." That was it. He was arrested and in the cells for the night.
UTC Arena, Chattanooga, Tennessee. November 21st, 1987, Hotel, Atlanta, noon. We're leaving from Chattanooga in a few hours. I'm so hungover and I don't remember much. I woke up with this black girl at 6 a.m. Don't have a clue where or who the fuck she is. I kicked her out. I think I broke into Doc's room and sawed his bed in half last night, but I'll have to wait and see. Maybe I just dreamt it. I need coffee. There's a line on my bedside table, but I think I could puke if I did it. I think I remember something about zombie dust. Backstage, Chattanooga, 6:40 p.m. Fuck, I feel like dog shit. Can't wait to fly back to Atlanta and go to bed. I puked in the bathroom on the plane twice. I guess I did saw Doc's bed in half. My memory is clearing. I also tried to throw Fred's bed out of his window. That's why I have a black eye. And Mick tried to jump out of the window. He was fucking out of his mind. Doc told me we all had our dicks out on the bar and poured Jack on them and then lit them on fire too. What the fuck? I have no pubes left. I gotta do a show. I can hear guns up there playing, so I guess everything is back to normal.
Doc McGee. Nikki and Tommy cut my bed in half with a knife so that when I got in it, it collapsed. 2 days later, they got a pellet gun, put a load of records at the end of the hallway, and lay shooting at them. By the time security came, the hallway was littered with pellets and shattered vinyl. One time in Switzerland, they bought what they thought was a pellet gun, but it fired flares. They got it back to Vince's room, Vince fired it, and this flare shot out and bounced off the wall. They all ran to my room to tell me, but of course when we got back to Vince's room, the door had closed behind them. So I went down to reception to get a spare key, and there was this guy with the whole hotel's room keys on a huge chain on his neck who said, "Sure, I'll come and let you in." I said, "Nah, just give me the key." I was almost wrestling him to try to get it off him. In the elevator to the room, I was telling him what a great hotel it was. And as soon as he opened the room door, smoke poured all down the hallway, the sprinklers came on, and the bed was on fire. So we got kicked out of that hotel.
Lyric. Spent $1 billion on amphetamines. Crashed a lot of cars. Fucked all the stupid stars in Hollywood, because I could. The Omni, Atlanta, Georgia, November 22nd, 1987, Hotel, 1:10 p.m. Buck, went straight to bed last night, slept 12 hours straight. Wow, I felt like shit yesterday. I have no idea how I got so fucked up, but I did. Doc still can't figure out how I got into his room and cut his bed in half. We do it to Rich Fisher all the time. We go into his room and steal his pills. I think I might go down and take a steam in the gym and get a massage. I feel fucking great today. So is this what sobriety would feel like? 11 p.m. Wow, just got off stage. A while ago, I was standing in the hospitality room, and this black chick came up to me with her son, mom, and dad, and introduced me to everybody. "This is Nikki. Blah, blah, blah." I had no idea who the hell she was, but I went along with it. I asked if anybody wanted a drink and went to my dressing room to get some beers for them. I pulled Fred aside and asked him who the chick with the kid was. He said that was the girl from the strip club I was with the other night. What the fuck? Okay, so I guess I was fucked up, but why'd she bring her kid and mom and dad? What the hell did I say? All of a sudden, I came down with a really bad stomach ache and had to excuse myself. I was polite, but I couldn't get out of there fast enough. So I'm sitting in my dressing room, hiding until they leave. What the fuck? Chicks equal trouble. Off to the Motley Jet, going to Orlando. November 23rd, 1987, day off. On the jet, 2:45 a.m. Tommy and Vince are fucking smashed and bickering. Mick is looking sick of it all. And I'm just staring out of the window into this darkness. If we don't get off the road, we're going to break up. Trust me on this one. Stouffer's Hotel, room 1267, Orlando, Florida, 11 p.m. Just back from the bar, I tried to talk to Tommy about how I'm feeling and just don't think he understands. He's happy all the time. Makes me feel even crazier. Maybe I'll try Mick. 11:15 p.m. Went to Mick's room to talk to him, but Amy was there, so I left. 3 a.m. I just took a handful of pills. If I'm lucky, maybe I won't wake up. Good night. A few years later, I was put on an antidepressant, and my life turned around in 3 days. It was an experimental drug at the time, now known as Prozac. I'd been off tour for months and had only left my house a few times. I was finally off drugs, but I knew the depression was getting worse. In 1987, I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know what it was.
Mick Mars. Did I know how depressed Nikki was then? Not really. Not at all. I didn't really pay attention except when he was bullying me and Amy. I just did my gig, did what I was supposed to do, and I was normally drunk anyway. I didn't really care. The band was self-destructing, so I just thought, fuck it.
Lyric. I'm feeling rotten today. I guess I forgot I am shot. I am not okay. So long to pain. So long to games. So long, say goodbye. Someone tell me why. I'm feeling cold inside. Do I want to die? Do I want to die? Someone tell me why. It's building up inside. Do I want to die and kiss it all goodbye? I'm a sinking ship on a sea of bliss. I'm not okay. I'm blind to this. Is this just a test to help me see? Lakeland Civic Center, Lakeland, Florida. November 24th, 1987. Backstage, 6:45 p.m. Took a chopper to the gig here. Izzy just came into the dressing room, miracle, and introduced us to his girlfriend. Oh my God, can I say Bruce Dickinson all over again? It's this chick Suzette that I fucked in a rehearsal room in Hollywood. She was 17. Then I used to buy drugs from her later. She would come over and I'd tie her up and treat her like a farm animal. She's cute as long as she doesn't talk. I used to gag her so I wouldn't have to hear her coke battle. Life is weird and getting weirder all the time. When she came in with Izzy, I acted like I'd never met her. Then when Izzy left, Tommy said, Six, dude, that's the chick from the Whiskey-A-Go-Go bathroom floor. Remember that? Oh, fuck. I forgot about that, too. We chop her back to the hotel after the gig. We have another show here tomorrow. Guns is at the same hotel as well as our road crew. Tim needs to lighten up. I have him dressed as a priest on stage, and he looks like a broke-dick dog over it. Maybe I need to get him drunk. He loves me. I know. He's always looking worried, like he's my Jewish auntie or something. Tim, I'm not going to die. I'm not that fucking lucky. P.S. Finished reading Animal Farm, and I'm starting in on Queer by Burroughs again. Suzette made me think of Bruce Dickinson because Dickinson used to hate me because I fucked his wife. I would just like to point out in my defense that A, I had no idea she was his wife, and B, it wasn't my fault that she climbed in my hotel window in England and asked me to fuck her, then afterwards said thank you and climbed out again.
Ross Halfen. Bruce Dickinson actually wrote the song Tattooed Millionaire about Six. He hated Nicky because he was fucking Dickinson's wife at the time. Then again, so were Vince and Tommy, come to think of it.
Lakeland Civic Center, Lakeland, Florida. November 25th, 1987. Hotel, 4:20 p.m. I just woke up. I was up till noon doing blow. We hired a big conference room and just fucking went crazy. Slash, Tommy, Stephen Duff, some crew guys, a bunch of whores, and cases of booze. We have a dealer here who just gives the shit to us. He gave us each an 8-ball. And we did our best to do it all. It was insane. We piled it all up on the table. I've never seen so much coke. Me and Tommy were trying to figure out how to cook it up so we could freebase it, but we didn't have all the needed supplies. We tried our damnedest and ended up smoking it wet out of a glass ashtray. My fingers are fucking blistered. I got 2 grams sitting here on the table next to me. I should just flush the shit, but the guy will just bring more, so I might as well do a line and go to the chopper. Fuck, I need a drink. My hands are shaking. P.S. Suzette came to my room before the party and wanted to fuck me. Tommy was in here with me doing a bump, and I told her to leave. She got all crazy, and I threw her out the door, and she slammed into the wall and started crying. Chicks equal trouble. Jacksonville Coliseum, Jacksonville, Florida. November 26, 1987. Backstage, 7:30 p.m. Here at the gig. The show last night was loose and tired. Fans didn't know. Guns is getting better. The crowd is digging them more and more. I have a good feeling for them. If the label will support them, they have a shot. They're not like the other bands who came out after us. They're more like us. On to more exciting news. I don't feel so depressed, probably because the drugs are keeping me from feeling. But I have been having bad side aches, like my liver is going south. I don't understand why I get traces of blood when I shit. I want to get a doctor out to one of these gigs and ask, but I know what he's going to say. I can't figure Vince out lately. He seems to be slipping away. When I talk to him, it's like he doesn't hear me. Is it me? He only cares about the pussy, but then I only care about the drugs, so we're not so different. I miss him. His eyes are always darting around when we're talking, or he says that he has to go. I miss music, new music. I miss my friends that I started this journey with. But most of all, I miss my sanity. I can't wait to get off this fucking tour. I'm so tired of touring. I want to kill management for not listening to us. Something bad's going to happen. I just know we can't be this close to each other and be slipping away from each other at the same time and expect this to last. P.S. Supposed to go out for Thanksgiving dinner, but I'd rather just order room service. November 27th, 1987. Day off. Sheraton Hotel, Fort Myers, room 538, 2:10 p.m. Played a show in Jacksonville last night. Got in about 3 a.m. I met a friend of my old dealer Jason's last night with a gram of Mexican tar but no rigs. I had to order aluminum foil from room service when we got it. Man, my mouth was watering. I smoked a bit and then hit the sack. Woke up today feeling sick. I know it's not that. Had Slash, Steven, and Duff fly on our jet last night. Izzy wouldn't come because I threw his girlfriend against a wall. Hey, Izzy, I fucked her first, so fuck off. Axel never comes. He's a twat.
Doug Thaler. I joined a tour in Jacksonville, and Nicky was pretty fucked up on Jack Daniels. He showed me some gummy black substance he had that he claimed was some kind of exotic cocaine that he was going to snort. I thought, good luck snorting a gummy substance. Then that next morning he said that he had lost that weird shit, and he asked me what had happened to it. I told him I had absolutely no idea. Tommy Lee. We hung out with Slash every day on tour, but Axel was a lot more reserved. There were times where he would be really cool, but then at other times he just had that fucking singer thing they all get. LSD. Lead singer disease.
Lyric. Find myself. I gotta find myself some love. I gotta find myself some drugs. I gotta find some liquid sunshine. I gotta find myself. I gotta find myself. I'm a sick motherfucker. I'm a sweet sucker mother. Ain't no one tougher. I'm a wreck. I'm a sleaze. I'm a rock and roll disease. I'm a pusher. I'm a shover. Ain't no motherfucker tougher. I gotta find myself some glue. I gotta find some suction. Now my aim is destruction. I gotta find myself. I gotta find myself. I gotta deal with my neurosis. I gotta deal with my neurosis. I gotta sniff myself some glue. I gotta find myself. Lee County Civic Center, Fort Myers, Florida. November 28, 1987. On the jet. 2:05 a.m. had a show tonight in Fort Myers. Right now we're on the jet on our way to Fort Lauderdale. I just got done fucking with Amy. Everyone except Mick was laughing their asses off. She was always talking about God, and she was on one of her rants. It makes me sick, so I stood in the middle of our jet with my pants down, with two middle fingers pointed towards her God, yelling, "Fuck you, God. If you're so real, strike me down," over and over. Amy kept crossing her heart and started crying, and the more she cried, the more I got into it. Needless to say, I'm sitting here in my seat, still alive and well. She's just like my mom in Vanity, full of shit. And in the end, she'll take Mick for everything, because one thing I can smell is a fucking gold digger. P.S. Tommy got the pilot to do a barrel roll. I bet Amy pissed her saggy little panties after all I said. Chicks equal trouble.
Mick Mars. Nicky was pretty horrible to me and Amy through the whole girls' tour. He was nasty when he was on Smack, Jack Daniels, Halcyon, sober, whatever. He used to pour food on us, make a lot of threats. He just could not bear the idea of me and Amy being together. He made that tour a nightmare.
Tommy Lee. You know what? Maybe we went a bit too far. It pissed us off because we had this protocol about not fucking the hired help, and then suddenly there were Mick and Amy sneaking downstairs and into each other's rooms together. But Mick is a pretty sensitive guy, and let's face it, he just fell in love with Amy. I mean, he ended up marrying her. But once Amy got involved with Mick, her attitude changed and she got all fucking diva with us, so we wanted to teach her a lesson. I remember we were always accidentally on purpose spilling Jack on her in the plane, pushing her buttons, seeing just how far we could piss her off. We were just fucking around and being really retarded, stupid kids.
Lyric, Baby Kills. She carries Mother's Bible, mixes Valium with her beliefs. Hollywood Sportatorium, Florida, November 29th, 1987, hotel, 3 p.m. Just woke up. Tonight is the last show of the U.S. tour, thank God. Gonna order some breakfast, but it's scary because I'm going home. Backstage, 6 p.m. At the gig, we're going to have our pyro guys shoot off a ton of shit during Guns' show in just a little bit. They've never used pyro, so I'm sure it's going to freak them out. It should be fun. Hey, 20. Now that, my friend, was insane. We loaded up 25 pyro blasts, and when Guns kicked into Welcome to the Jungle, they all went off at once. The band looked like they were going to shit their pants, and then got the biggest smiles I've ever seen. Axl was wearing a Motley Crue t-shirt. That was unexpected. Gotta get ready. The last show. November 30th, 1987. End of the U.S. tour. Airport. Noon. Sitting on the plane waiting for it to take off. I still haven't been to bed. Last night topped all nights of debauchery. We got a huge conference room, about 2 ounces of blow, but this time we had all the goods to base with. Tons of pills, booze. We lined these chicks up, 6 or 7 of them, snorted coke off one's back, then stuck our dicks in her, then go to the next one, do a line, on and on. Talk about Animal Farm. We're out of our minds. Lots of hugs and gonna miss yous and thank yous. We smashed the whole room up pretty good, and then when it was time for the airport, T-Bone took some sleeping pills and passed out. We had to push him in a wheelchair to get him on the plane. They sat him next to a little girl, and she started crying. Oh, God, we need a break. I'm so tired. My eyes are sunk in the back of my head. I see it on everybody's faces. I love these guys, and I know we're a great band. But it's all spinning out of control, and nobody is taking the wheel. As long as we make money, we're the darlings of the world. Good night. I am on my way, home sweet home.
Tommy Lee. Fuck, dude, the Sportatorium show. We called it the Snortatorium because all these fucking coke dealers turned up at the show. One even had a license plate that said dealer.
There was just endless amounts of free cocaine. The second that the last show was over, Nikki and I both stuck our faces in these huge piles of coke and didn't come up. I remember them wheeling me in a wheelchair through the airport because I was fucking done.